Alright, now we are going to this other chapter, chapter 16, after dealing the last time, you remember, with family and property, about the mere fact of having property and how the many of the governments of the world, including especially communists and even our own governments, are trying to remove private property from the hands of people. We see a good example that I thought of after, where the government gives you a tax break if you rent property, but if you own property, you get no tax break. It tells you something. Now, in the United States, it's still not this bad yet. It's the other way around. There's still, at least for a time, you get the tax break for mortgage payments that you make. But in Canada, you can see what they're trying to do. They're just trying to dissuade people from owning private property because you don't get the, there are no incentives and so on for people to do so. But if you rent, you end up... Now, there are some arguments saying, well, we tax the buildings that people live in and government gets some taxes from it and so on. But I think the general thrust is correct. Government is in the goal is to try to remove people from that position of owning private property. Now, obviously, if people do own property, you have to deal with that. And one of the other problems now is dealing with the matter of inheritance, of passing on what you have to your children. And this deals with the idea of the family and in inheritance. I should mention the next topic beyond that, after we study this, is the family itself. We'll get to a couple of chapters on that. The functions of the family and then the foundations of the family, and see why it is so important that we work hard to maintain the family. But today we're dealing with the family and inheritance. So we'll begin. All right, Chris, if you would begin, please.
Property is power and control. Property is therefore the key to power. Basic to all control, property is the control of inheritance. According to the Columbia Encyclopedia, inheritance in law is the right to acquire property to the death of on the death of the owner. In Anglo-American law,
Anglo there means English, right? English-American.
In Anglo-American law, inheritance is by the grace of the state, which may exercise any degree of control over the property of the decedent.
The one who died.
The owner who dies, including the total escheat.
I don't know how to pronounce that word, but it means the government acquisition of title.
By the grace of the state. And how much grace does a state have? Since when has the state been the source of grace?
Yeah, the state has taken over in many places the right to decide what happens with your property. And in this case, the state may exercise any degree of control over the property of the one who dies. You think, why would that be? You know, I got a concern for this even before I was reformed or I'd just become a Christian. When I read on a marriage license in my home country, Guyana, where you have to, the two people have to humbly beg the Minister of Home Affairs for permission to marry. How dare the government assume such a role? How dare they give permission to you to be married? They decide, oh, you must beg us for permission. Now, it may mean ask in the old way, but even if it just means ask, why do you have to ask them for permission for you to be married? And that means they can tell you no. You may want to marry someone and they have the right to say no. Well, that's when they start to take things away from the family. And in this case, it's the right of inheritance. Okay, next.
when the state enters into the question of inheritance, property gradually is transferred from the family to the state. The inheritance tax is simply a first step in that program of confiscation.
Confiscation means to take away.
For the family to maintain itself, the family must control inheritance, and the biblical laws of inheritance are entirely family laws. The Bible keeps property immune
or protected
from taxation and from anything but family control of inheritance.
Okay, what many countries have done, and this is something that liberals love, is what is called a death tax. You pay taxes on the property all along, and when you die, the property is taxed again. And then the rest can go to someone else. Guess what is happening there? What you earn doesn't stay with you, only a part of it. Now, if you leave that to your son, and then your son dies, they take some of that again. Before you know it, it will not take many generations for private property or the ability to pass on things to inheritance to disappear. Can you drop that so it's not... I want the men to be able to see my hands and face. Eventually, the government takes away everything. If it continues taking a part and a part and a part. And this is not speaking about the government taking taxes all through your life. The money that you have paid taxes on, that you bought property on, they tax again. It's sort of like what you would pay as taxes for your
used car.
Well, not just used car, but used car is a good example. I mean, when they're done, they could get equal amount of value of the car in taxes. Because the amount of taxes you pay are thousands of dollars when you buy it, and then thousands of dollars when somebody else buys it again, and thousands of dollars depending on the value of the car. They can easily get many thousands of dollars on one car. Property tax. I mean, the province might give you a break on your property taxes so that money is not taxed again. But the federal government taxes the money that you pay property taxes with. And it's taxes upon taxes. And eventually, it's a way of taking away the inheritance from your children. Right? I'm a little bit irritated by this because in my house, they dug up the street about 16 months ago, and they still haven't fixed the road yet, and the part of the lawn that they dug up. And you keep paying property taxes. If you wait with your property taxes, they'll be sending somebody to take your house. But when they don't fix your road after a year and a half, you think, something is not right here. But gradually, the government will take away your property. And the danger in the West is that we do it under the cover of law. That's why we in the West are worse than the communists in this way. Because we pretend that we're not doing these things, but we're doing them. We're hypocrites. The communists made no bones about it. They were stealing from people. And they're saying, we want to redistribute wealth. At least you know what they're doing. The Chinese government's still doing that. I sent some people's copy of a video and showing what they're doing in some of the houses, breaking down people's houses and taking their land away from them. But you know that's what they're doing. Here we do it undercover. We get the law to protect us. Like the example I used a few weeks ago where the Supreme Court said you can take away the man's property and sell it to Walmart or give it to Walmart. And it's legal. You see, we do it under the cover of law, and that's why it's worse. Because we're using the authority that God's given to us in such a deceitful way. You know, we should, in the West, should be ashamed of ourselves. And God will severely judge us because we're attacking the foundational things that God's made, which is the family and the right of inheritance. Next.
Inheritance, according to the Bible, was a sign of faith, character, and godliness on the part of a man. The Bible declares, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children. And as H.B. Clark, a law editor, stated in his study of biblical law, there is nothing in Jewish law to warrant the belief that the king or the state has any right to inherit property upon the death of the owner without lawful heirs. The control of property and inheritance is entirely within the jurisdiction of the family in biblical law.
Right. So what you do with your family, your property should be up to the family, has nothing to do with the government. They shouldn't be collecting any taxes. That should be none of their business. Okay? Next.
What was the consequence of the biblical law of inheritance? It meant simply that power was concentrated into the hands of the family. This meant that the authority of the family over his children was a very little one. And then diminished power.
Okay, stop there for a minute. There's unlimited, the power of the family was not removed. And let me explain what I mean here. Let's say if your child is not obedient, and you can tell the child and say, hey, you're not being obedient, you're not going to be getting inheritance from me. Now, the government says, oh, don't worry about it. You can be as bad as you want. We'll take care of half of your father's property when he dies, and we'll take care of you. You see what it does? It reduces the authority of the father and the mother in the home, in the family. By doing this, by removing the pressure or the authority of parents to control their children and say, hey, you don't obey, you've got nothing, no inheritance. You'll be working for everything you get. So we're not going to help you if you're not obedient. There's no authority there anymore. Okay, please continue.
The discipline of the parents over their children was unquestioned because authority and economic power rested in the family. The Bible is a realistic book. God knows that man respects only authority, which has power behind it. When an order is given, that order is futile unless it can be supported by the power to enforce it. If power is transferred from the family to the state, then the ability to give orders and to maintain order is transferred from the family to the state.
You got that? Do you understand that? And that is really a matter of great concern. This is one of the reasons where teachers in schools are unable to create discipline, because they don't have the authority to discipline anymore. You can't teach without discipline. But now when the government takes away a part of that, you can't use it as a consequence on your children and say, hey, if you don't do it, you get nothing. You can't do that anymore, because the government said, oh, don't worry about it. We'll make a law, take away your father's property and give it to you. In another way, welfare or some other way. Then it becomes a problem. Okay?
Educational philosophers begin to speak of the children of the state because parental authority has been transferred to the state.
And this was begun really under the time of communism. The Nazis took over this, the Germans. And now we in the West are saying the very same thing. Children now are supposedly the wards of the state. Means children of the state. Now, since when do state get children? But they didn't just decide to take over everyone else's children. They have priority. That's why they can go into your home anytime now. Because they made laws and give themselves the power to do that. And you have to be very you have to be very careful. You want to find out some of the things I've talked with Karen about is some of the rules that the government has. Like if a child doesn't bathe one day, they can go and that's considered abuse. And you can take the child away. Or the child gets a cold, a few colds consistently, then, oh, and parents are not taking care of them. They can actually go there and take away your child. Government has taken on a whole lot of power because it says, oh, the children are ours. Whereas the Bible says, no, 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 the children belong to the parents. The parents' job is to discipline them, to teach them, and to leave an inheritance for them. Well, when the power shifts away, then the state says, no, we will take care of your inheritance. Don't worry about your parents. That's why we're building so many nursing homes now. We're telling our children now, when we're old, we're not going to nursing homes. They better take care of us. They learn that it is their duty, pardon?
That's what my mother says, too.
Yeah. It's a good thing. You should. You should. Right? And that's the way it's supposed to be. You don't need the government to be taking care of your parents. Right? And freeing you from that responsibility. And by the way, when grandchildren are there helping to take care of grandparents, it's an incredible blessing. It's an incredible learning experience for them. So when people think, oh, it's work, well, yeah, it surely is work taking care of old people. But the benefits of to the family are very great. Financially, it might be hard, but the lessons you're teaching your children, that's an important one. Okay? Next.
According to Carl Zimmerman and Lucius Cervantes in their study, Marriage and the Family, Western society has had a family organization since Christianity became the faith of the West. A man's life, from birth to death, is guided, affected, and colored by family relations. The basic unit of the social order is the family. The family is the socially stable unit where the family has liberty and property.
Okay? Next.
As a result, the totalitarians hate the family and declare it to be the enemy of social change. Totalitarianism hates the family because it is the basic thesis of all totalitarians that man's first loyalty must be to the state, whereas the Christian family's first allegiance is to the triune God. The totalitarian therefore seeks to abolish the family. Lenin said, no nation can be free when half the population is enslaved in the kitchen.
Okay, you notice the reaction. By the way, we should have given Lisa this paragraph here with all this totalitarian here. But yeah, Lenin, you know who Lenin was? Well, you should know who Lenin was. They see this as a terrible thing. I told you about the Dutch woman who is trying to pass a law in Holland that would make women pay back all the money that the government spent to educate them if they didn't go out and work in the workforce, if they chose to stay at home to raise a family, as a means of punishing the family for the wife staying at home. Well, it's coming, you know. You see a little bit of it, but that's exactly what we're doing in the West. What the communists did in a very blatant way, we're doing it in a very quiet, under-the-table way. But we're doing the same thing, and we're moving in the exact same direction. Okay.
As a result, the communist state abolished the family as a legal entity until 1936, and the family since then has merely been a legal breeding ground for the state. The Soviet Union, 2 years after the revolution announced, the family has ceased to be a necessity, both for its members and for the state. Women were free from the kitchen only to become the unskilled worker force of the Soviet Union. According to Zimmerman and Cervantes, among the means taken by the Soviet Union to abolish the family were the following. The forbidding of parents to give religious instruction to their children. The encouraging of children to denounce their parents. The abolishing of inheritance. The equalization of the non-registered marriage with the registered one. The promulgation of three forms of common menage contract for an indefinite period, for a definite period, and for a single occasion.
Okay, let's stop there for a second. So you can have a temporary marriage, a semi-permanent marriage, and a permanent marriage.
And it can be common law or it can be registered.
It could be common law. That means you can just live with someone or you can be married to that person. So there is no need for marriage anymore. Now, I want you to also see, as we're studying this, that you understand why Christians are so strongly opposed to homosexual marriages. Because when those things take place, they continue to help to destroy the family and remove the authority and strength of the family that God gives. And by watering down the family becomes weaker, and the result is the next generation is going to be weaker. When the family is weak, the children are weak. When the family loses the power or the authority God's given to it, someone will take it away. So these things, remember, marriage was not made by Ottawa. But now, Ottawa is making marriage. You see what it did? It took away the authority from God and from family. The government had no right to be involved in this. But the government did this in quite a keen way. For them, marriage was just a convenient thing, a place for having children. But it's kind of interesting that one of the things you notice in many countries that were communist or, and very important, are moving towards communism, there is something unique that you find in those families. While, you put it, communism is increasing, or socialism, something goes this way. The birth rate goes down. Why? Family is the key. When the family is not an essential unit anymore. Many people you talk to, you know, Chinese people would often say, oh, we can't get any, in China we can only have one child. When they come to Canada, most never want to have another child. So, why? Unless they become Christians and start with, hey, children are a blessing from God, not a curse, it's not a punishment. Children are a blessing. But in the communist, the communist government was actually paying people to have children at the end of communism.
Yeah,
now, people weren't having children. The communist government started to pay people to have children. They would give them an apartment. You could own an apartment if you had children. A government as a gift to you. And guess what? You consider places like Sweden, which are very socialist countries, Denmark, Norway, Holland. The birth rate is going this way. In Canada, we used to be having 1.75 children. Now we're down to 1.5. We're going down. We're not even having a show. So as the government gets stronger and family gets weaker, there are less children in society. Does that tell you something? In the United States, the rate is dropping for family. Why? Because there's no unit anymore. It becomes sort of a marriage becomes sort of a partnership when we negotiate. That's why you have things like how do you spell it? IALS?
Prenuptial agreements. Prenuptials.
Prenuptials. A prenuptial agreement is an agreement you make of for your property that you have, so that if you get a divorce, your wife or your husband can't get your property that you had before. They're expecting that they're going to get divorced. It's almost like you're planning for it. Okay, this is my stuff. When we get divorced next year, I keep my stuff. Right? So there's the inheritance thing has been thrown out. And you see how we're working together. Now let's continue.
This latter legal expedient, which was a marriage contract for a single occasion, was a propaganda piece aimed to demolish the difference between prostitution, promiscuity, and monogamy.
Okay, let's get those three words. You know what prostitution is, right? Selling everybody. And promiscuity is having sexual relations outside of marriage. Any kind of sexual relations outside of marriage. And monogamy is the marrying of one person. Okay?
The legalization of bigamy and the abolishing of the legal differences between legitimacy and illegitimacy were other minor steps with the same purport of the destruction of the family.
Yeah, so whether a child is born as a legitimate, you know, we used to use the word very clearly. If you were born outside, we use words like a bastard, describing someone, a child outside of marriage. But now it's not anymore. We don't make any distinctions. So there's no pressure to do anything otherwise. It's very easy to just live how you want. Many people live together 30, 40 years and never get married anymore. In Suriname, where I live, more than 50% of the people living together were not married. It was just normal. People just, and they would live together for a long time, but they'd never be married. More than 50%. Are you married? No. Live together. Imagine what inheritance time comes, the difficulty that poses. Okay.
Free love in a free state became the ideal. Family life was declared to be especially harmful to collective life. The citation.
Okay. Next.
In the United States, the attack on the family is being steadily mounted.
That means it's coming on.
The state increasingly claims jurisdiction.
That's the right to control or right to rule.
Over the family, its children, income, and property. The state assumes that it knows what is bad for the children, and it claims the right to interfere for the children's welfare. As a result, the family is progressively weakened in order to strengthen the power of the state. The authority of parents is legally weakened, and the children are given legal rights to undercut their parents. According to Zimmerman and Servants, the reality today in our court is a very startling one.
That means a striking one, something to grab your attention.
They report that in New York, Chicago, and Boston, children are now allowed to use second sponsors of a parent some years later for a land
alienation
of love and the affection of the parent.
Okay, that's like this. If a woman marries a second husband, the children from the first marriage can sue the husband from the second marriage and say, you didn't love me enough, and take him to court. Mm-hmm. So they can get paid for not being loved enough.
Who will take him?
The father? Yeah, the second father.
The stepfather. Okay, the stepfather made the mother love him more than the children.
Okay, so...
So they can sue. There are many other cases of children now divorcing their parents.
Yeah.
You heard me right.
Yeah.
Children are divorcing, have the right to divorce their parents. Children are suing their parents for the right to stay out late at nights. And by the way, if my son says, I want to stay out late at night, the court, if he takes me to court, the court might say, okay, he can stay out till 12 o'clock. But if he does something wrong, I have to pay for it. If he breaks something. You see what they're doing there? They're destroying the family. They're taking away my authority that God has given to me. That's why this is dangerous. Okay? I know about this because one man, his son used to throw stones at people's window. This was out in Oregon. So his father spanked him. They charged the father for abusing the child. Then the child broke somebody's window. Then they sued the father to pay for the window. So the father can't discipline the child for breaking the window, but the father must pay for the window that the child broke. What that does? Destroys the authority. And these are real cases. Okay.
In New York and Chicago, the children have won this cases, but they are still pending in Boston. Thus, also, we had the New York case where a divorced mother custodian of children.
That means she got the children after the divorce.
Was imprisoned for
neglect
some years after the divorce. The husband was safe because he was not given custody, although the earlier discoloration serial would have blamed him also.
Okay, that's on a different issue. We will not talk about that. Please continue.
Such powers, when given to the child, are not for the child's welfare. They are destructive of the family and of the child. And more, the state legislates over the family, sparsely for its welfare, the more it destroys the family.
The state legislates, that means the state makes laws that are supposed to be good for the family, but it's actually, those laws are actually destroying the family. Right? The state loves to do that, pretend that it's doing always for the best interest. I remember a few years ago in Canada, in Toronto here, they had the big program in the schools from the United Nations asking children, what rights do you want? And then the United Nations is going to consider all the what children want and then make up an international declaration and try to get countries to give children all of the rights that they want. And these children, they were talking about some of the rights that the children wanted. One of the most common ones is to come home whenever I want. And the parents should say, okay, come home whenever you want. So they don't have to require to ban the parents from giving them work, so the parents don't have to make them work. Well, my theory is that the Bible says you don't work, you don't eat. And from the time you're very little, they can do work. Right?
Mm-hmm. Non-paid.
Oh, they get paid enough. That's enough pay for their.
But they always want to look for the financial part.
Yeah. Well, some people don't want to do any work. all together. So. Okay, next.
No institution can long exist if it is not free.
Notice I underlined that, so think like you read it twice. Continue.
The more controlled an institution becomes, the less life it has. Its life and functions are transferred to the controlling agent, or they simply cease to be. How long would the club last if its every act were controlled by the state? The life and the authority of the family depends on the liberty of the family and the economic expression of the family's dependency is the right to private ownership of property and the right of inheritance.
Now, when you pass lots of laws, almost always it kills the thing that you are trying to pass laws about. Now, there are two cases you can illustrate this from. Remember the Pharisees. They made up more than, what was it, 1700 some law ways in which you can break the Sabbath day. It killed the joy of the Sabbath day. Because all you're thinking is, well, how many steps did I make? Did I make 1760 steps? If I did, I've broken the Sabbath. What do I do with my chickens, and which lay which egg and where? What do I do with the donkey that's fallen into a hole, and how deep is the hole, and what animal is it? Did I kick grass seeds when I was walking on the grass? That means I planted and I broke the Sabbath. Anytime you start to make laws that way, you would kill it. Right? And in any social club, if you've been in a club and you start coming up with all of these rules, you just want to be friends and relax with some people and have fun. But if you start making rules, before you know it, you think, nah, too much. I don't need more of that restriction. God has given us liberty in Jesus Christ. We have freedom. That's why I often talk about, the Bible says you should honor the Sabbath. But I'm not going to sit down with anyone and find out all the details of what they do on the Sabbath day. I'll become like the Pharisees and I would kill the joy of the Sabbath day. We have so much freedom in Jesus Christ. But if you find churches like Pentecostal churches, well, I saw one man being insulted one time because he had a ring on his finger and it wasn't a marriage band. And the pastor refused to baptize him until he took that ring off of his finger because he was wearing jewelry. Why would they allow marriage ring then? That's jewelry, but they would allow that one. But if a man had a ring on his finger, take it off or you can't be a member of this church.
Put the sword on the inside and you can't tell.
Well, no, they wouldn't allow any... They knew you wasn't
married.
They wouldn't allow that. But all of the rules, you couldn't wear makeup if you were, men or women, I guess. A woman couldn't cut her hair.
Has to wear a skirt.
Had to wear a skirt. And because all of these rules, but God didn't give us all of those rules. He gave us 10 commandments. When God says, tithe 10%, that was to liberate us and say, he made it simple. So you're not biting your nails saying, well, how much should I give about this? But God didn't give us all the minute details of every detail. Say, this is how you must do every detail. For example, should you tithe? Why should you wait until the end of the week? You should be tithing every day. Otherwise, you could be losing interest there. And should you be? No, the Bible doesn't get into all that kind of foolishness. But that's what people like to do. And that's what kills things. And that's what the government, when it starts to pass all of these laws against the family. You should hear when the judge says, well, you can spank the child, but you have to use something 12 inches, no more than 12 inches long, and you have to, you have to slap him in a certain position and never with your open hand, or I can't remember what the rules were. All of these silly guidelines. No, simply slapping the child in the hand, don't touch that, it'll burn you. And it's done. But if you have to look for the right equipment and you have to measure it and make sure you don't leave a certain size of mark, that's absolutely foolishness. But that's, well, in a way, but it's their way of really controlling the family, destroying the family. Let's finish on now.
Now, where the family controls inheritance, it also controls marriage. As Frederick Engels notes in the study of the origin of the family, private property and the state, but the Bible long ago plainly recorded it. When Jacob became the heir, his father Isaac blessed him and charged him and said unto him, thou shalt not take a wife of the daughter of Canaan.
Ah, that means if he did, he could lose his inheritance.
In other words, the father had the power to require a godly marriage because Isaac was leaving a sizable inheritance
he had a stake in the future, and because he had a stake in that future, he had the right to control it by requiring a godly marriage.
Okay, so Joshua and Joel, you marry someone who's not a Christian, no inheritance. That's I have the ability to do that from God.
Mm-hmm.
But I, in fact, more than the ability, the responsibility to do that. To tell our children, no, we will help you, but here's what God's law says. You obey God's law? Yeah, and then we will help you. But if someone marries someone who's not a Christian and think, my father's going to help us out. Oh, no. Oh, no. Right?
This was a legitimate and godly power. The Bible, as a result, gives a great deal of space to laws of inheritance. Roger Sherman Gaylor, in his classification of biblical law, takes more than 7 pages merely to list these laws.
Okay, and you can read that if you wish to find out more about the inheritance. Okay, next. Lisa.
Okay. Where the father possesses private property and provides for his children's care and future, and controls their inheritance, it is the authority of the father which governs the family. Where the state assumes the responsibility for the welfare and education of the children and assures them of future social security, it is the authority of the state which governs the children. Power over private property is authority. Where the state controls property, income, and inheritance, power has been transferred to the state. Honor and authority go hand in hand. And where parents have authority, they are more readily honored.
That's true. And that's something to remember. You will find the ones who will take care of their parents are parents who have been following God's law and been teaching God's law to their children. And then the children in turn learn respect and honoring of their parents. We had this drilled into us as children. And that's why my mother is not in a nursing home somewhere, but living with one of us. And she has 5 kids. And she can pick where she wants to go to live. Anyone will have her. Is what was pushed into our head from the very beginning. Responsibility for your parents and being and honoring them. Why? Because they have the authority. Okay? Let's continue.
The biblical law declares, honor your father and thy mother. Honor thy father and thy mother.
Yours, fine.
That thy days may be long upon the land, which the Lord thy God gives thee.
See, he was only King James then.
Yeah.
It is because God gave this law that he gave also the laws concerning private ownership of property and the right of inheritance. The two go hand in hand. God forbids adultery because he has ordained and established the family as the basic and central social unit of mankind. God therefore commands private ownership of property and private control of inheritance in order that the family may be maintained in its honor and authority. We do not honor the family or parents if we strip them of their power.
Okay. Okay. And next.
In fact, we are now being told that the family is obsolete. One prominent and influential churchman has said that the family is, like the tribe, a relic of the past. The tribe served its purpose and is now gone. The family, a great institution for its time, has also seen its day, and it must make way for a new structuring of society.
Right, let's get rid of the old things. The family's a relic.
Who was this influential churchman?
I don't know. But there are lots of people who say similar things, you know. The Church of England, they have so many people that they have said the church, God's law has evolved. So when the law says you shall not commit adultery, well, you should commit adultery, but in certain situations. it's okay. In some cases it's not, but God's law is evolving.
It's like the Catholic Church having marriage annulled after 20 years.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Saying, well, it wasn't a real marriage in the first place, so we annul it. They don't allow divorce, but they just call it a different name, and they annul the marriage. We had a communist leader in our country a long time ago. He became capitalist. So the way he said it, he says, communism has evolved.
Because his pocket got too big for his money.
You realize that, well, after the communist empire started to fall apart, he realized this isn't working, so he shifted gears and joined up with America. And he says, oh, communism has just evolved. We haven't changed. We're just evolving at the time. So I thought, yeah, okay, evolve away. Next.
The death of the family is therefore planned, and on every continent, the executioners are at work. Together with the death of the family, the death of God is also proclaimed. And we are assured that the New Age has no need for God or the family. The menace and intensity of dedication of these hostile forces cannot be underestimated. They are an active, powerful, and highly organized force in modern society.
You know, something that this we sort of overlook, and we think, just a few crazy people who are trying to destroy the family. No. This is a planned act. This is Rushduni speaking 40 years ago. He's saying this is an organized, orchestrated plan. You know, they recently found out that the promotion of homosexual marriage in Canada was planned in the 1960s. This was a plan of how they were going to become more mainstream and how they are going to become a basic unit first, and you get some rights and then some rights. And they were actually surprised they were able to get all these rights so quickly. But this was a plan back in the 60s. This is not a new plan. This is not just some accidental thing. So the death of a family is a planned act. Next, last one.
But even more, we dare not underestimate the power of the triune God, who rules the nations and fulfills his holy purpose, despite all the conspiracies.
You know that word, conspiracies, Lisa?
Imo. And the wild imagination of men, but none can share in God's victory unless they stand forth clearly in terms of Him and His holy cause, unless they separate themselves unto Him. Jesus Christ said, "He that is not with me is against me, and he that gathers not with me,
scatters
abroad." And you, where do you stand?
Okay, there are two things in this last paragraph we pointed before we summarize. One is that, you know, if we did not believe in the sovereignty or the control of God, we would have to be very depressed people tonight. Very afraid people. Scared. But because we believe in the power of God and the control of God over all things, that's the reason we are not to be afraid. But the second point is, are we going to participate? Are we just going to be observers, or are we going to participate in this way to be able to stand up and defend the truth of God or what God has taught us? Unless we are able to do that, we're just going to be bystanders looking and seeing God's power, or we could be a part of it. Now, how can we be a part of it? In our own families, by the way we teach our children, the way we teach new Christians who come in our circles. We don't have to change the whole world. We can change where we are. And as that happens, then it will spread. Sometimes we can stretch too wide, we have no control. And we have to start within our own area. Make sure our children don't do like their children. Now look what their children do anyway. One, they don't have any children, most of the times. So when they die, they're gone. Or when they do have children, they abort them, or they don't teach them properly, and they have no future. We have something that they don't have. We need to take the time to teach our children so that they are raised up, understanding the dangers that the government and other agencies are putting on the, exposing the family to, and then work to defend the families that way. Okay, let's summarize. Property is power, so to control property is to control power. And the state knows this full well. But the Bible teaches that having an inheritance to pass on to your sons was a spiritual duty, a sign of faith, a sign that you love God. So you can see the obvious conflict. The state says, forget it. God says, do it. The state then tries to make children of parents children of the state. With loyalty to the state, the new children would not think about leaving inheritance for their own children. They'd be thinking about, well, what can we do to save the government? And many times they spend more of their time trying to fight for animals than they are for their own children. Further, the state destroys marriage by reducing it. A couple of examples that we looked at, the common law living is now marriage. Homosexuals are considered married. By doing so, marriage is never the same. The death of the family is a planned act of the state and its stooges. That means its servants, things that work for the state. But God will destroy them both. Have hope. I should include their work. You've got responsibilities. You should be working towards that. Okay, any questions on this?